Well, greetings and welcome to The Dividing Line starting at 3:33. Let's just say that things have been busy around here today, and so we got started about 3 minutes, well, 27 minutes earlier than we announced, but I was driving in and I told Rich, okay, we're going to go for 3:30, and he forgot, so. And again, while I was gone, I was at dinner up in South Dakota, and somebody said, "You're mean to Rich." And I say, you don't get to see or hear what's going on behind the window. You're only getting half the story. And so, but you have your pity party friends out there who think that, you know, I'm mean to you.
See, that's just double grief, baby. Double grief. Get you on both ends. So,
anyway, it is good to be back here in Phoenix, especially because I saw the picture of the snow in Rapid City that came in today, and it's not that I would have, you know, it would have been really bad to see snow. It would have been sort of cool, actually, but I don't want to have to fly out of Rapid City on those little CRJs with snow. No, that's cool. So I was just looking at Twitter, and a King James Onlyist has joined with the INC guys to identify me as a cultist. Because I oppose cultic King James Onlyism. Yeah, great, wonderful. Do you see the what's in the background here? We haven't put this up yet, but it's from P45, and this is the John 10 section, and just got it, and we're not sure exactly where we're gonna try to put it up there if we can, but I'll have a little P45 in the studio. That'll be good. Either that, or I'll put it in my office, but probably in here. So we'll see if we can get up there without destroying everything in the process. Okay, let's start off with what's on everybody's mind, which isn't current arguments in YouTube or in the internet, Facebook. We'll get to that later on. Wow, what a weekend! I called that one. I kept telling folks this is going to be an interesting one, and I, had been told by Nick and Conley, who are the two guys in our chat channel who really know Iglesia Ni Cristo, really know what they're like and what they're about. They had basically said, "Look, they follow a script. It's always the same script, and." Joe Ventilacion just doesn't have much freedom to go anyplace else. So, you know, if you've heard him once, you've pretty much heard him, you know, that's as far as they can go. They really can't change their presentation. And so I knew we were going to have a lot of assumptions about Unitarianism, and John 17:3 and John 14:28 and a few of the standard subordinationist texts that are out there. And so I get to go first. I'm defending the thesis. And so I just very clearly laid it out from the start. If you quote John 17:3, then you just don't even know what this subject's about. Did they care? And notice I said they. Because one of the big... criticisms that I got from INC folks immediately after the debate was I was mocking them because I posted a picture. And when I first walked in, there were three tables on each side. The front table, a middle table. No. There was two tables on each side, and then a middle table for the timekeeper, the moderator, and somebody else. I guess two timekeepers. And I'm looking at this going, I don't have a team. I do debates on my own. It would be very, very strange. I've done a couple tag team debates, not very many, but I've done a few. So I said, look, I don't want an empty table with chairs behind me. That's distracting. It looks silly. Looks like someone's supposed to be there, but they're not. So the next time I came in, that was gone. And it was just my table and one chair. On the other side, you had five guys. And they came in and they started laying out all these books with numbers on them. Mainly Bibles, but there are other books too. And I'm watching this and I can't help but sort of chuckle, because it's like, just what does it even cost to ship all these books around? I mean, they're heavy. There's something called a computer. It's fast and it's light and it's much easier to ship. And I had just never taken on an entire group before. And so I took a picture of them putting, you know, this library out. And I was like, wow, I've never taken on a team with a library before. Oh, you're mocking it. No, I just thought it really looked strange. But in the INC mind, they take that as proof they're right. In other words, if I had done the same thing, put a bunch of people on my side, put a bunch of books out, for a lot of these people, it's like, oh, looks like it might be evenly matched. Evenly matched? What does the number of people and how many books they have to do with anything? Well, as a lot of us have discovered, the reality is that INC folks don't listen to almost anything. They certainly, well, look, I've had a bunch of Christians say, oh, what a waste of time. Shouldn't even waste your time going up there. Yeah, you got some nice pictures of Mount Rushmore, but you shouldn't waste your time going up there. You know, this is just some little Filipino cult. Look, they're a very large religious group in the Philippines. They are a virulent cult. There are many people trapped in them. Yes, they definitely appeal to those who have very little biblical knowledge, very little curiosity. But does that mean those people are worthless? By doing this debate, not only have we provided a clear documentation of the fact that you can stand up to the best that they have to offer, and take them on and defeat them handily, point by point, but you likewise have been able to provide people with a resource that will encourage even people there in the Philippines. We've already heard a lot from people they have been greatly encouraged to stand up to INC, because they tend to be extremely aggressive there in the Philippines. And some people accuse them of violence there in the Philippines. And so it was well worth it, not only to provide a witness to those within INC, but an encouragement to Christians likewise to be a part of those who are presenting the gospel to the members of Iglesia Ni Cristo. So I had, of course, seen the debates. I knew exactly what to expect, and got exactly what I expected. I knew that Joe Ventilacion would misbehave, because it is the very nature of their debating methodology to misbehave. When you answer a question, they say, "That's not my question," and then they just repeat it, because they're not trying to ask you a question. They're not trying to clarify anything. They're not trying to advance truth. This is a cult. And they want to maintain the cultic thinking of the people in the group. And so there are certain phrases, there are certain points they'll repeat over and over again, even if it really has nothing to do with what's being said, just simply to reinforce the group think of the people within the cult. And so I start off my presentation by saying, you know what, if you quote John 17:3, it shows you don't even understand what the issues are. So what does he do? The first verse you quoted was John 17:3, right? And goes right back at it. And I had already refuted. I had already said, you're going to assume Unitarianism. You can't do that. Didn't matter. Didn't matter what I was saying, because they don't care about a debate. If you had flowcharted that thing, it would have been an abject disaster for the INC side. But they don't care about flowcharting, and their people don't care about flowcharting, and their people don't care that they pick and choose Bible translations just simply to make their point. They don't care that on the one hand, Mr. Ventilacion will emphasize the accusative of theos, ton theon, as if every accusative form has the same meaning. I was really amazed at the arguments that he was making. Really, 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 really bad. But they'll focus upon the accusative form of theos in the second clause of John 1:1, or in John 17:3, trying to make a connection between the two just based on the accusative. But then, when faced with 2 Peter 1:1, they'll say, well, we don't derive our theology from grammar. We need to compare spiritual with spiritual, which is a nice way of saying, I will not be held to a standard of consistency in the handling of Scripture. My ultimate authority is what I'm told to believe by the leaders of Iglesia Ni Cristo. And all the rest of this stuff is just window dressing, is what it is. And so we pretty much knew what we were going to get. And I had watched as Mr. Ventilacion, in his previous debates, had utilized this horrifically poor form of questioning, which isn't really questioning. It's just argumentation where you put words in the other person's mouth and say yes or no. Which, again, does not impress any deep thinker. Any person that follows logic, studied debate, is just immediately going to dismiss him out of hand. But for the people who are following you around and just, oh, it's Mr. Ventilacion, you know, it's one of the leaders of INC. You're all you want to do is to reinforce that thinking on their part. And so we get into, and you know, they have this interesting form of debate, which wasn't a bad form of debate. It was intriguing, actually. And it had more interaction than the formats that we normally use. It wasn't bad. I wouldn't mind using that format in debates in the future. Might snipe that and use it. Would you like to come sit behind me? We could get everybody from channel to sit behind me and sit in channel chatting. No talking, because that would interrupt me too. I know they got to talk. Yeah, I know. Be honest with you, all the rest of you were all upset about that. The only time I actually was myself interrupted by the talking was in that last statement, because I was at the podium. Evidently, a lot of the other, they had been quieter before, but they really just got really loud because they don't care what I'm saying. They're just talking about how they're going to, but you know what they want to emphasize in the next thing they're saying and stuff like that. So, but I twice in my closing statement said, "Yo, guys, yo, over here." I know you heard him the whole time. We would definitely address that in any future things. That guys. Only one person up front speaking, and if you need to talk to each other, write notes, or use sign language, or whatever. But stop with the yammering. Anyway, I knew what was going to come in the cross examination, and I for some reason in the stuff they sent us for the bios. He said he had done 7 debates. 7. I thought there had been more than that, but then I started thinking about it. I said, well, I have not seen more than 7. I've not even seen listed more than 7. I might maybe seen 4 or 5 in YouTube, and some of them weren't even in English, so I didn't bother looking at them. 7 debates. And so I'm like, all right, I'm not going to be run over by this guy. I know what his tactics are, and I'm not going to let it happen. And we didn't. We didn't let it happen. I did not let him get away with it. Yes, a couple of times, someone has already made a GIF or JIF, depending on how you pronounce G-I-F. Someone has already made a GIF of one of the times when, after a particularly silly question, I mean, you know, do you believe Exodus 3:14 is in the Bible? Yeah, think it is. Mm-hmm. Do you believe it? Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of thing is, you know, it's self-destructive to the credibility of the person asking the questions and stuff. But again, that's only self-destructive in the minds of critical thinkers. INC members are not critical thinkers. They are warned against critical thinking. And with all these groups, you know, I've said for years, when you're talking to Jehovah's Witnesses, one of the things you want to try to do is to start get them to think critically about the claims of the society. As long as they see themselves as a part of the society, then any negative information about the society is negative information about them. You have to put them in a position where they can see the society over here and themselves over here so they can analyze claims about the society. Well, double down, triple down, quadruple down on that for the INC, because the INC makes Jehovah's Witnesses look like a bunch of liberals. When it comes to the controlling authoritarianism of the structure. And so, I knew what was coming. And as soon as he started trying to play tricks with John 17:3, I just wouldn't let him do it. And it people go, how are you so patient? I wasn't. I got the gospel in clearly three times. Very clearly, three different times, I got the gospel to the people that were listening, the few that were listening. So I had that in mind. And I had talked with the guys with South Dakota Apologetics. And Aaron Knudsen, I love it, Knudsen. Aaron found out just how much work something like this is. It's huge. It is. That's why we don't do it very often ourselves, because it's just. And the guy had was in the hospital the weekend before with bad stuff. I mean, bad stuff, as in stuff that can kill you stuff. And so here he is working himself to death. And by the way, I really appreciate it. Let me thank all the guys, including Aaron and Justin, who was in a plane crash, and Giggles. And everybody else, Giggles is really excited that I gave him his own nick. He makes one really mean steak. Oh, that thing was incredible. Wow. I said, I'm not a steak guy, but if steak tasted like that, I would be a steak guy, because it was the last time I had a steak that good was on the Mercury, the first time we took her.
Well, they went out on a ledge there and going with that, because I told them not to.
I know. I told them
I told them, you know, taking James White to Ruth's Chris is, you may as well take him to McDonald's, because it's just a complete waste of time. So seeing a picture of it coming back where, you know, that speaks
volumes. Well, he made him his house.
Oh, wow.
So those were on the grill.
That's huge.
And the vast majority of the time I get steaks, it's like chewing on the bottom of a shoe. So I just, even at nice restaurants, so I just don't bother. That was absolutely incredible. It was just like, ate the whole thing. Just, it was good. It was good. So anyways, all the guys did a tremendous job. They put a lot of work in, organized it real well. Working with INC is not easy. There were all sorts of dances that had to be done and everything else. And so very thankful for them. And then they found a way to my heart, and it wasn't taking me out to see Mount Rushmore, which was fun. You know, if we hadn't gotten to go, if the weather was beautiful, then it was like 74 and now it's half a foot of snow. But, they put a Concept 2 rower in my hotel room. How cool was that? I got to row 35,000 meters this weekend, and I did 8 laps around the hotel, which may not sound like much. This hotel is huge. Milo Hotzenbühler has performed at this hotel. That's how big it is. That's how big it is. Yeah. That's big time. Milo, I debated in the same room where Milo Hotzenbühler has performed. That I may need to put on my, we may need to update my thing on the website about, you know, debated in mosques and 24 books and debated in the same room as Milo Hotzenbühler. I think that might be the biggest thing to add in there. So anyway, they did a great job, and we had talked beforehand, and of course they, as well as Nick and Conley with trueiglesia.org, they just wanted to make sure this debate would be something that would be a great tool in the future and would present the gospel to the members of this religious group. So that's in the back of my mind. So on the one side, I want to communicate the gospel. I want to do so passionately. But at the same time, we have a person here denying the very center of the Christian faith. We have a false teacher who's twisting the scriptures. And as is always the case, what you have to balance and come to a middle position on is, how do you remain uncompromising, firm, clear, gracious, gospel-oriented? How do you do that? I can only answer to the Lord for how I do it. I can't say that someone else has to do it this way. But I tried. And when people say, how can you be so patient with someone like that? I wasn't being patient. What you interpret as patience is simply my prioritizing what I want to do in that debate. And only rarely did I just simply smack him down, because that would get in the way of what I really wanted to accomplish. I did. And there are some places where people have caught. There are a couple places. There's once where he had just said something completely inane about Jesus' statement to the thief on the cross, "Today you'll be with him in paradise." Well, was he right then in paradise? No, it's in the future tense. You know, it was just really weird. And I sort of looked out, the audience went, well, that's already floating around the internet. That one little thing has been turned into a GIF or JIF or whatever you call it. And I'm just sitting there going, and there were probably 4 or 5 of those, because you listen to the questions that he was asking, and so many of them were utterly absurd on any scholarly level. They're just utterly absurd. And so please don't point to me as a paragon of patience. I'm not. That's self-control based upon the priority that I want this whole debate to function in this way. So anyway, so I do have a, I fired up the thing. I fired up the thing. I'm sending you I'm sending you Chrome, and I'm sending you something toward the very end of the debate. And so I'd like you to possibly, can you zoom in on that window or something like that? There's a lot of things that we could play from the debate, and I'm hoping that eventually, now maybe somebody can tell me, but right after the debate was over, Iglesia Ni Cristo took the link to it down. Have they reestablished it? Because one possibility was they, what I'm looking at here is the result of the live stream, which is normally what we have for the dividing line. But that includes the 15, 20 minute long intermissions and everything else. And I would imagine eventually South Dakota Apologetics is going to put together a different version of it with better sound and take the intermissions out and stuff like that and post that. This one right now is at 118,000, more than 118,000 views on YouTube. That's really good. That sort of messes stuff up. Does that mess stuff up for you? All right. So there's all sorts of things we could look at, especially during the cross-examination section, going either direction, that were just fascinating. They really, really were. But I sort of thought the very last portion of the debate said it all. He's just given his final closing, and I've got 5 minutes. And remember that Mr. Ventilacion has, over the course of the years, and if any of you are going, you shouldn't have used so much original language, this guy, go watch his debate with the Church of God minister that's on YouTube on the Trinity. Now, the Church of God minister wasn't actually a Trinitarian. He thinks he is, but he doesn't know what the Trinity is. Didn't know the original languages. Joe Ventilacion beat him over the head with his ignorance of the original languages and was very proud of doing so. So call it karma if you want, if you really want to mix some strange theological concepts together. But every time I put the Greek up on the screen, all of a sudden he got very jittery and very agitated. And I asked him once, what does this word mean? What does this word mean? And all he'd do is go to an English text. I don't think he can read it. He claims to teach it. And he reads, you know, he can pronounce the words. There's a huge difference between being able to pronounce words and actually be able to look at a text and go, oh, well, this means this and, so on and so forth. So, here's just a portion. It was my cross-examination, and I had just asked the guys to put the text up on the screen. So let's just take a quick look at this.
Thank you, sir. I'd like to start. I'm actually free tomorrow evening. If you want to continue this at 5 o'clock,
you could come and join us. You can ask your question if you would like.
Oh, but how about they ask both of us questions?
No, what?
They could ask both of us questions.
Oh,
we could just go back and forth, even time. I'll make myself available 5 o'clock.
You already have your own at 10 o'clock. Okay.
That's fine.
Okay, you have your own at 10 o'clock. That's why we prepared.
I'm just offering it for you, sir.
Well,
on the screen.
No, on the screen. What I would suggest is that if you would like, we could sit down again with Aaron. Okay, we could sit down again and sit another time. So we will continue part two. Okay, God.
But I'm available tomorrow evening.
Godfather Part Two.
If you want to keep asking questions,
Godfather
we can keep doing
part
it.
Part Two.
Let's take a look at Isaiah 43:10 on the screen, please.
All right, I love that.
I've outlined in order that you may know and believe and understand. And then, could you look at the last three words there and tell me what those are?
See, I had a problem with my eyeglasses. Okay.
I wish they were showing this.
Yes.
Is that what you're asking for?
Yes, yes. Hati ego eimi.
Huh?
Who's speaking in Isaiah 43:10?
Well, it's obvious. It's God who is speaking in Isaiah 43:10.
So Yahweh is speaking.
I'm looking over. There is a tetragrammaton in that.
This is Greek, sir. It's not.
I know. That's why I said. Oh, I don't see a kerios there.
Right there.
Do you have the kerios?
Yeah.
No, there's not.
Legai kurias hatheos.
Says the Lord God. It's Yahweh in Hebrew.
Okay.
My point is, sir, why does Yahweh use the phrase ego I me of himself?
Well,
isn't that a title? Isn't that a name?
Ego I me is not a name.
It's not being used here as a name? That you may not understand that
okay.
Ego I me. I am.
I am, see? But he didn't say, well, my name is ego I me. That's different in Exodus 3:14, when Moses was asked, what is his name?
But
he said, Asher it is just your conclusion based on what you're saying.
All right, that except God, that's what Jesus quotes of himself in John 13:19.
Oh, that's what he quoted?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yes, I am. You want me to show it to everybody so they can see it, say it too?
You go me, okay.
That'd be really, really be nice for everybody to see here.
Okay.
John
you go
13,
me?
19. Look at it right here.
No, I already told you.
Pistuseta kai suneta hati ego aimi.
Okay.
I'm sorry. That's...
Oh. Yeah, you're pardoned.
We'll get to it. Hold on.
You're forgiven.
Oh, you typed the wrong thing in.
No, that's okay. To err is human, to forgive is divine. Okay, I'm forgiving you.
Here is the NA-27. And boy, you're going to, all of you are going, ooh, when you see it, I wonder if you're going to go, ooh, again.
Well,
John chapter 13,
can you
repeat,
ooh,
verse 19. That when it comes about, what's the last phrase there? Hati what?
Well, I don't see.
In order that you might believe, isn't that the same verbal form that's used in Greek substitute, right here?
Is this
John 13:19?
Oh, I thought we're talking about John 8:58 here.
Yeah. No, John 13:19.
Oh, okay. So we have a different context now.
Yeah. The context is Jesus is prophesying about what's going to happen in the future, just like Isaiah 43:10. So you have the same verb, and then you have hati ego aimi. Why would Jesus take the words of the Greek Septuagint that were about Jehovah, Yahweh,
and apply them to himself? That's not the way I see it there. The I am there, the question there in John chapter 8.
No, it's not chapter 8, John chapter 13.
Yeah, that's what I said.
No, you said John chapter 8.
Oh, John chapter 13, okay. I'm still in John 8:58. Most of the time, Christ is being questioned if he is the Messiah or not.
No, that's not what I was talking about.
Okay, so John 13.
John 13 is the betrayal of Judas.
Okay. Now I tell it before it comes. Now when it does come pass, many believe that I am he. In the King James Version, I am he, with an italicized he.
Yeah, hati ego aimi.
Okay.
Using the exact same verbal form that's found in the Greek Septuagint. Well, so my question for you is, why would Jesus, if everything you've said about him is true, apply Isaiah 43:10 to himself?
It's just you're thinking that he was applying Isaiah 43:10. See, in this version, which is NLT, I tell you this now so that it happens you will believe that I am the Messiah. The I am there.
Can you show me the word Messiah in the Greek, sir? We're not talking about bad English translations.
Oh, okay.
Let's stick with the Greek.
Okay.
It's barely a paraphrase, folks. If you have to use that, you're not dealing with the New Testament.
Oh, okay.
You're not.
Oh.
And the time ran out.
Saved by the bell.
So there you go. That's called trying to survive for 5 minutes without ever really dealing with the issue at all. And anybody who's read my book knows I dealt with the I am sayings rather extensively, an entire chapter just on John's presentation of the I am sayings, which included, by the way, he said I never mentioned this, but I did in the book, John 9:9, which was an amazingly shallow and horrific attempt to get around the I am sayings of Jesus in the Gospel of John. But that's what happens when INC is forced to answer questions. They're not going to answer the questions. Now, what has happened since then? Well, it's been interesting. I ran afoul of the social justice warriors and the Black Hebrew Israelites have I had to add to my block or mute list on Twitter as much as I have in the past few days. And not so much for abusiveness as just people that just didn't even seem to me that they had even listened to the debate, or if they had, they were only listening to one side. Unthinking, just repeating the same mantras. The response has been the demonstration of the cultic nature of Iglesia Ni Cristo to the nth degree. And what I mean by that is when you look at how cults respond, they tend to be easily offended by anything while being extremely offensive themselves. So, you know, you watch what they did in the debate and the talking back and forth and the interruptions and the questions that are just not even semi-respectful, like, well, is Exodus 3:14 in the Bible? Do you believe what it says? You know, this kind of stuff. Those aren't meaningful questions. They're disrespectful. And yet, I'm the one. You didn't even bring a Bible to this debate. Really? It's just, you should stick to Bible verses. This kind of stuff that just makes you go, it makes you reach for the mute button because there's obviously no way to actually talk to this person or reason with this person. There's a lot of that. But then, starting, I think, the next morning, I was sent a link to a Facebook article where a guy that we had met, it was actually a Sunday morning, because a guy that we had met before the 5 o'clock meeting, very few people showed up to that 5 o'clock meeting, by the way, but a guy that we had met out in the hallway, his little boy's name was Calvin. He was kicking a lighted soccer ball around about, I don't know, 19 months, 20 months, something like that. And he came in with us, and he took a picture of me talking with Mr. Ventilacion. Now, why did I go there to ask him a question? Real simple. We wanted to get hold of their official book that defines their theology, Fundamental Beliefs of Iglesia Ni Cristo, by the last leader of the INC, not the current leader, but his dad, I believe. And so, you know, I just, what I asked him when we met was, well, look, you can quote from my book. You can quote from the Confession of Faith in my church. We are wide open in regards to what we believe. We're not hiding anything. You accused me of misrepresenting you during the debate. And yet, how could I be expected to accurately represent you? There is no official statement of faith that you make available to people outside that has any meaningful depth to it to be able to hold anybody accountable for consistent exegesis or anything like that. And so I was basically saying, you talked about doing another debate. And I found out in this conversation that he was the next day moving to San Diego and will be taking up a position in the congregation in San Diego. And so he was saying, well, we could do it in San Diego or we could do it in Phoenix. I said, well, I haven't found that folks in Phoenix are all that big on going to things like that. I think San Diego would probably be more attractive to a lot of people. And he said, I can guarantee 3,000 people in San Diego. Great. Sounds like a plan, but here's the problem. I need to be able to quote from your official material. So I would like to buy a copy of that book. Oh, no, we only give that to ministers. And so we had this conversation, and the other guy that was with him was talking about how, someone can't just walk into the cockpit of a jetliner and ask to read the manuals because they really won't understand. And and I'm like, well, I could turn that around and I could demonstrate you didn't understand what you were reading in my own book, but that doesn't mean I'm going to hide that book from you. And they didn't give me the book, obviously, and didn't give me any hope of getting it. We are certainly working on obtaining it via other means. But the fact is that this conversation was me challenging them to not be so secretive about their beliefs, because they are secretive. You go to their meetings, you have to sign in, they keep an eye on you. This is a very, very controlling group. And I said, it doesn't help your reputation any that the book that defines your beliefs, you won't let anybody else see it. Oh, no. So that's what the conversation is about. Well, Sunday morning, I start getting these notifications, people. Hey, the INC guys. Now, not INC Media, which I guess is their official thing. But when I saw it, the post had 998 shares on it. So nearly 1,000 shares. And it was a picture taken by that guy whose son's name was Calvin, of me talking to Joe. And the whole story was, and I've sent it, I've taken it, a translation was provided to me. And then when people started saying, well, that's not really what it's saying, I sent it to other people who speak that language. They said, yeah, that is what it's saying. So what it was saying was, I wanted to know more about INC because Joe had demonstrated that the Bible doesn't teach the Trinity, and I wanted more information so I could convert to INC. And I even wrote to Joe, he's never written back, to say, could you do something about this? Could you, you know what that conversation was about. You know what we actually said to one another. So would you please, you know, put out a statement or respond to this, or, you know, do what's right. Because if the roles were reversed, man, I would have been on that like a duck on a June bug. So, you know, I just realized that phrase doesn't mean much to most people outside the Midwest, but you can tell where my mom grew up. Anyways, it's like a duck on a June bug. It's better than a poke in the eye with a sharp stick. There's all sorts of wonderful, fun, idiomatic phrases like that that probably people outside the U.S. are going, what is he talking about? I don't know. It's, you know. So, could you explain the part of the debate when he brought up John 9:9? Well, I suppose I can. So anyway, since then, people have been saying that guy who posted it has now apologized, and people have gone after him, and he's withdrawn it. Okay, but a whole lot of people were really, really willing to believe it. And it was so obviously false. And yet people wanted to believe a falsehood. The groupthink, the mindset of these individuals, the fact that almost every single one I'm talking to, totally incapable of critical thought. Just, it's like their critical thinking faculties, that light switch has been turned off. It's like talking to the worst Jehovah's Witness, the worst Mormon, and yet it is not just the worst. That's the standard. That's the norm amongst these folks. It really is an amazing thing to observe. And so we pray for the video that it'll be. Obviously, I'd love to see INC post it. If INC does not post this video, has anybody checked? If someone could check, INC Media, I think is the official name or something. Could someone see if they can find a posting from INC of the video of that debate? Because the link that used to be on their website, it's dead. They pulled it. So pray that they'll put it up, first of all. That'd be great. Even if they don't, we'll have it up, and we will make it out. We'll get it out there, and yeah, I'm being told they had a problem with recording and uploaded SD apologetics. So they're just linking to the SD apologetics recording. That's what I'm being told is okay. So they pulled the other guys. Interesting. Well, hey, here's my suggestion. Whatever we need to do, have the guys with SD Apologetics. Well, I'm sure they're watching. Aaron, contact Joe and say, what can we do to get you what you need to put your own version out to your people? Right? That's what we want to do. You bet. Let's get it out there. Let's make sure that it's out there, and just make sure that it's the entire debate. Because I forgot to cue this up, and I've got other things to get to, so I'm not going to get to it. But man, the spin, did you see the faux news story, the fake news story that they did on the debate? They have their own little news people type show thing. And it was the most wow report. Yeah, I never said a word. And they're interviewing all these people that are converting as a result of the debate. Yeah, uh-huh. And it was amazing. And, you know, I've watched some videos they've put out about their veneration of the church administration and stuff. It is scary. It really is a very controlling organization. And so pray that they'll post a video, that the video that we've got, like I said, had 118,000 nearly 118,500 views on the one from South Dakota Apologetics. And so we want people to be able to see it. We want it to be able to be utilized for a long period of time. Pray for Nick and Conley. I'm sure that they probably have more contacts and things going on at trueiglesia.org than they've ever had before. And that's good. They had tried to talk to me about doing something like this years ago. And I was like, oh, guys, come on. I just, a man's got to know his limitations. And it's true, but lo and behold, it happened anyways. And so appreciate everybody that made it possible for us to get up there. You know, when I talk about that travel link that we have, you know, that stuff's very helpful in making all this happen. Almost didn't make it. Man, let me say something. I'm really, really appreciative to the pilot. I think it was Jorn. The last name was Jorn, J-O-R-N, I think. The pilot of the Canada Air Regional Jet flying from Dallas-Fort Worth to Rapid City on Thursday evening. I could tell they were getting close to canceling that flight. And when I asked about flights next day, I was not going to make it. And I was literally looking at a 16-hour drive, which is dangerous, just dangerous to drive the night like that. I mean, that was dangerous when you're 20, a lot more dangerous when you're my age. And that pilot, not only did he communicate with us, but he was on his phone calling Mesa Air and calling people. And not only do I think that's why the flight made, but he even got us another plane. We were going to have to wait for this other plane to come in. It was going to be really late. He got us another plane. We only got in about an hour and 50 minutes late, you know, about 2 hours. Hey, I'll take 2 hours over 16 any day. And he was just a really nice guy. So let me say thanks. When you're normally angry with people, you might as well say thanks when someone really does something and goes above and beyond. So that was really cool. So anyways, it was quite the interesting experience. I hope, you know, for those of you who go, waste of time, I'm sorry, you don't understand. You've got the wrong view of debate. You don't have my view of debate, let's put it that way. Maybe from your perspective, you wouldn't engage in something like that. But from my perspective, it was a great opportunity. And I'm very thankful for what happened. So with that in mind, let me remind you that there is going to be a huge contrast, between what I just experienced with Joe Ventilacion and what's coming up in, 20 days from today, barely 3 weeks from now. I am going to be doing a debate in London. That means I have barely 3 weeks home. And then I'm gone for the longest overseas trip I've ever done. And I can only blame myself for this. But the opportunity was there. And when I get the opportunity of teaching, especially for EBTC and stuff, it's hard for me to say no. And I've had a student in the past at EBTC. His name is Radek. there in the Czech Republic. I think he's going to be translating for me. And, you know, they're really neat guys, and I'm looking forward to it, but it's still going to be really, really a long time for me. You know, some people can be away from home forever, and it doesn't impact them. I tell people I'm a little bit like a carton of milk. I've got about a 2-week date on there, and after that starts smelling a little bit funky, you know what I mean? And so I'm going for 22 days on this trip. That's just ridiculous. But we'll be debating at an incredible site in London. A bunch of people have been saying, have you seen all the really incredibly nice things that people said about me and Peter's unbelievable radio broadcast? I don't know why this is starting, but I'm just going to turn it off. The unbelievable radio broadcast that was released over the weekend was Peter D. Williams and myself on the Reformation. Was a terrible mistake or a work of God? And I told you when I came back, I said, I think that was one of the best conversations I've ever had on that subject. And it was. And everybody, all the comments, Justin even put together a whole screen of super complimentary tweets where people have been saying, why can't this conversation be like this all the time? Because Peter D. Williams is a Orthodox believing Roman Catholic, and Francis gives him the hives on a few things too. And I mean, we're talking old style Catholic answers. Roman Catholic, you know, really believes that Rome is the true church and that there is an Orthodox understanding of Roman Catholicism, and all this liberalism just doesn't really fit. And we go at it, but we go at it with tremendous respect for one another. And it just makes a huge difference. So we're debating the Marian dogmas at the Brompton Oratory, which is his church. And if Google it, I mean, the pictures. And I'm hoping to have my own photographer there. And we should get lots and lots of incredible pictures from the debate as well. Pray for the debate. Pray for my health, obviously, the whole time I'm gone. But pray for the debate. But I cannot imagine a greater contrast than what you're going to get. Not in the sense that it's going to be boring in any way, shape, or form, but the level of conversation is going to be so far beyond what I just experienced that the contrast might burn my clutch out. It might. There might be a really... Ever smelled a clutch burning? Yeah, I think we may have to worry about the smell a little bit. Just in how massive the difference is going to be. So that image, well, that's not an image. That's more of a odoriferous parable. Odoriferous parable. Yeah, there you go. All right. So there's that. Now on to less enjoyable things. there be stuff going on that I really haven't been able to be on the front burners with. I'm sorry, it's just difficult to read stuff while you're on the SkyTrain going from B concourse to C concourse, and then you stick it in your pocket, and you've got to find some place to eat, and you're slamming down. I was so thankful to find Chick-fil-A in Concourse C at Dallas yesterday. It was really good too, by the way. It's just, you just sort of feel a little disconnected from everything when you're away. I didn't even turn the television on the whole time I was in Rapid City. I just didn't bother. And it actually helps your blood pressure when you do that. It's sort of fun. But I think right at the beginning of my trip, I said, I think it was at the airport leaving, and I said, you know what I think I'm going to do? I was sent, and I do not, unlike other people, I do not try to create a network of informants. I don't have time for that. Don't have time, don't have interest. But there are people who send me things. And sometimes things I get, I don't even know where it came from. But over the years, I have been sent a number of things from a place called The Bunker. The Pulpit Bunker is its fuller name, and it's associated with Pulpit and Pen. And I've known some people who've been a part of it in the past. I know a lot of people, actually, who've been a part of it in the past. And a lot of those people today look back and go, I can't believe I was part of that. And I repent. And the things that have been sent to me, obviously, are not a fair representation of what's there all the time. But there are so many things. And I've had people tell me, I won't even send you some of the stuff I could send you. Great. But not only have I seen myself personally attacked, my character, my ministry, but my daughter, my family, and many men that I know to be men of God. And so I said as I was flying out, I was at Sky Harbor. I don't think I was at Dallas. I think I was at Sky Harbor. When I basically tweeted out or put on Facebook, you know what? I think I'm going to talk about this. I'm going to name names. Well, there have been a lot of conversations that have taken place over the past 5-6 days. And until today, I was just going to actually address some more overarching concerns. What's brought all this about has been not only the stuff that's been sent to me from the bunker, but some of the things that have been said and insinuated concerning my response to Eastern Orthodoxy and CRI and Hank Hanegraaff and all that stuff from last week. And there have been people who have basically been saying that my response was insufficient. They've been accusing me of inconsistency. That I'll take a bazooka to William Lane Craig, but then I won't over here, I won't over there. By the way, let me just refute that. Those of you that are promoting that thing, I'm sorry. I don't know why you don't seem to understand what's going on, but you don't. You are wrong. I have consistently interacted with William Lane Craig's materials for decades. Decades. You can go back decades. I've played portions of his Defenders class, his Sunday school class. I have interacted with his Molinism. I've interacted with his debates with atheists. I've been doing this for a long, long time, and I have done so absolutely fairly. And the very fact that I just raised my voice, but, oh, see, you're inconsistent if you say that there's something wrong with how we do things. Category errors, big problem in people's thinking these days. People say you hold people at different standards. I hold believers to a different standard than I hold unbelievers. And I think William Lane Craig's a believer. Some of you don't think he is, which is sort of funny that you'll criticize me for that. I hold William Lane Craig, Leighton Flowers, to a higher standard because I accept their Christian profession. I don't hold a Muslim to that standard because they don't make a Christian profession. I think that would be obvious. I've explained it 1,000 times before. But the reality is, anybody who says that I have been unfair to William Lane Craig, prove it. Prove it. How many hours of William Lane Craig's voice have you heard in this program? Not edited. Played straight out. You may disagree with my criticisms of him, but you don't have a leg to stand on that I have not been absolutely fair to the man. Absolutely fair to the man. So, there was an article posted about the CRI situation, and I briefly criticized it because of its tone and its lack of depth. And as a result, I saw a number of insinuations. Well, see, you know, he's soft on that. Sure is hard on Christians, but when it comes to Eastern Orthodoxy. I got a note from a dear friend of mine, and he doesn't realize how dear a friend he is to me. We don't really talk all that much, but it doesn't matter. I just have so much respect for the guy. And he is a... I won't give him much more information because I don't want to drag him in the middle of all this. And honestly, I had sort of forgotten the fact that he has spent a lot of time studying Eastern Orthodoxy. He really, really has. I'd sort of forgotten that, but it fits with what he does overall. And yeah, I see it. I just got to press on. There's nothing I can do about it. I got a note from him that said that basically thanked me and said, you know, what you said about Eastern Orthodoxy was accurate and careful, and you're right. Most people in the West just don't even have a clue. They are evaluating Eastern Orthodoxy on Western standards. They don't know what the issues are about. A lot of the stuff is cultural. And even when they're right about such issues as scriptural sufficiency, role of tradition, justification, theosis, all the rest of that kind of stuff. He wasn't saying this. I'm just reiterating what I said. That even when they're right, so often the criticism rings hollow to the Orthodox person because of the way in which it is phrased and the direction of which it's coming. As I said the first day I responded to the news about Hank Hanegraaff's joining East Orthodoxy, I don't talk about this subject because trying to get everybody up to speed on it is beyond my capacity. I've had enough conversations with really well-read Eastern Orthodox to recognize how complex this issue is. And as soon as you say that, a lot of people just dismiss you. Well, you're just compromising. You're just compromising. Sorry, has nothing to do with compromising. It's actually just trying to be honest and scholarly and accurate in what you're saying. And the problem is that if you don't do that, then the criticisms you offer, even when they're on important issues, are crippled by your inability to accurately contextualize them, to make them relevant to the actual position. In other words, I think one of the differences that I have with certain polemicists is that I want to respond to the best arguments of the other side, not to the least common denominator, not to the gutter arguments or the low arguments or anything. I want to respond to the best, because if you respond to the best, then that's still going to remain relevant to the less arguments. Whereas when you present the more popular level stuff, it's not actually relevant to those who actually have thought through their faith. That's the same with Islam, which gets me into trouble. That's the same with Mormonism, which gets me into trouble. I mean, how long have I been doing this? Remember back in the days when about the only thing we were dealing with was Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses. What's one of the things that got us in trouble? But the fact that I wouldn't go along with some of those popular people dealing with Mormonism because the argument wasn't appropriate. So this is nothing new. This has been going on for literally decades. Just trying to be consistent. So, P. people who people who have in essence been criticizing me. I guess an apology was given for this, but I was identified as a false religious leader, shall we say, claiming authority as to how to engage these issues. I just basically got sick and tired of what I was seeing coming out of the pulpit bunker. And so I said, let's talk about it. Well, since then, what has happened is there's been a number of conversations, not involving me. I've been a little bit on the busy side. And when I was coming home, I was contacted by a friend of mine. I forget what the article was, but one of the recent Pulpit and Pen articles written by J.D. Hall, in lamenting his grand theme of the downgrade, mentioning various and sundry big names from Carl Truman and, Carl Truman's not a Southern Baptist, that's for sure, but Albert Mohler and Roger, what's the guy's, the ERLC or whatever guy, Roger something. Anyways, you can tell how much I'm into that stuff. He threw in an utterly gratuitous waste of words shot at Tom Buck. Now, some of you don't know who Tom Buck is. If you saw the full presentation that I did one time, laying out the case against Eric Cantor, that was shot at Tom Buck's church in Lindale, Texas. I've spoken there a couple times, I think that time and one other time. If he wasn't so far from Dallas, I'd speak there more often, but let's just say he's out in that part of Texas where if you just want to go out in the backyard and shoot off a few, it's okay. Sometime, I think, last year or the year before last, I don't remember. You can read the details of this on a statement that Tom wrote, posted on Facebook. It was removed from Facebook. It's currently on the Alpha and Omega site, Alpha and Omega Facebook page. He talks about a situation where he was asked to do a memorial for a police dog. And he goes into the details of it. Church member, it was the church member's dog. He was the partner. There's going to be a memorial one way or the other. And normally it's some liberal somebody. Tom didn't want to do it. His initial feeling was, But after praying about it, thinking about it, opportunity here, even the governor of the state of Texas could be involved. So many people. Is there a way to make this an opportunity to do a gospel presentation? So he did. Since then, and because, I can think of a number of people who once were a part of Pulpit and Pen, Pulpit Bunker, et cetera, et cetera. You don't leave there. There's no neutrality, it seems. You basically become a mortal enemy. You're either with me or against me. I've seen that attitude amongst people before. You're either with me or I'm going to come after you. Well, J.D. Hall has gone after Tom Buck for having done that memorial numerous times. I've never seen J.D. Hall accurately represent what took place. It's always been spun to make it sound wacky. And it's always been put together with all this other weird stuff so that it just sort of communicates the wackiness without ever accurately representing it. And a recent article did this again. Just total waste of cyberspace. Just throw it in there just because, you know what? I think I'll take another shot at Tom while I'm at it here. And I couldn't help but think about last year, last summer. Remember last July? My, how time passes. It's been less than a year. When J.D. Hall went ballistic in attacking Jeff Durbin, RefCon, and myself. And Jeff and I sat right here in this very room, and we documented falsehood after falsehood after falsehood in what J.D. Hall said. We played him, we played his comments, and then said, is that true? Nope, here's why. Bing, 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 bing. Never heard a word of repentance. Never heard anything withdrawn. And in the years since, in the almost year since then, I have seen stuff sent to me where when pressed, or when just out of the blue, all of a sudden he doubles down on it. Repeats the stuff that had been refuted very clearly last year. It's very troubling. It's very troubling indeed. And so when I was flying back yesterday morning, I think, Tom contacted me and he said, I've written this thing up and I'm going to post it. And I didn't actually get to read it until I think I was on the SkyTrain at DFW. And basically what he was saying is, look, this is a pattern of behavior that many people have spoken to J.D. Hall about. And J.D., when you talk to him, will say, you know, brother, you're right, brother. You know, I need to work on that, brother. And, you know, I really didn't mean to do that. And 6 months later, he's doing it again with a vengeance. With a vengeance. And one of the things that enables him to do this is that he is invited to go speak at things. And he says, well, this person doesn't have any problem. And you see, he's used me like that in years past because I defended him. I defended him in the situation with the Cantor situation. I defended him for a long time, even when I winced at what was being said. Well, I don't anymore. And as a result, have been attacked vociferously. And one of the things that really bothered me, I'll be straightforward here. At G3, JD was there. And he was at a booth just, 10, 15 yards from ours. But yeah, even less than that, I think about it. 10, 15 feet. Anyway, right across the hall, just down a little bit. And at one point, he just came walking right up to me and started talking to me about AHA stuff. And told me some stuff I didn't know. Because like I said, I don't have all those contacts out there doing their thing. But the whole time he's talking to me, I'm sitting there going, in my mind, JD, I know what you say about me in allegedly secret places. I know what you said about my family, about my daughter, about me. Why are you one thing to my face and something completely different someplace else? Why not? You know, I just if you really believe the things you say about me to other people when you're angry, doesn't that actually reflect your heart? And so I have been used in the past as one who has defended this man in his consistent, I was going to say nuclear option. It's a little bit scary these days with North Korea and Iran. But it's the nuclear option. It is the go for the worst. And if you read what he's saying today, he'll always go back to any place he's ever been criticized and always double down on the places where there has been disagreement with other people. We were right about this, and we were right about that, and we were, you know, the Pope thing and whatever else. And there are a bunch of us, including Tom Buck, that are extremely concerned about what is going to happen at some point in the future. And the people that are going to be damaged, because people have already been damaged. That's the point. A lot of people already have been damaged by this utter lack of grace, this inability to differentiate between standing firm and using a flamethrower to light a birthday candle. And so Tom wrote up the article. It was immediately removed. And yeah, I know. And basically, as I understand Tom's heart and his intention, what he's saying to the people that are now being used by JD, saying, hey, I think your criticism is all wrong. Because if you saw JD's response to what he wrote, it was just completely dismissive. Totally ignored the factual issues about the memorial. Totally ignored everything else, basically, that was being said. And just put on the full martyr garb. You know, I'm a polemicist. I just simply put up with this type of thing, and it's what I've come to expect. And so, in other words, it doesn't matter how many of us have expressed sincere concerns about his attitude and actions, and the distinction that exists between what happens in the allegedly secret halls of the pulpit bunker and what happens out in real life. There should not be a distinction between those two. There shouldn't be. Well, because certain people were mentioned by Tom Buck who are now being used in this way, well, now there's a whole lot of tension. Tom, you shouldn't have done that. You should have come to this person, you should have come to that person. I think pretty much everybody knows. I knew, let me put it this way, I knew when I was defending JD that I sort of sat back at times going, oh, JD. And it was sort of like back when, before Sam Shamoon went ballistic on me. I did say many times to Sam, he has to confess that I did. I talked to him over and over and over again. But I never went to the mat. It was always, you know, come on, brother. Part of it's because of the problems that we have in the church today, in the sense of how disconnected we are, especially by distance and things like that. I mean, if you're going to contact elders in a church, man, you're really getting super serious at that point. And Tom even mentioned once that he had written to, there was some problem with JD's church, and he had written in defense of JD. And I remember that, and I think I even offered to write in defense of JD at that point in time. I don't think I ended up doing it, but I think I offered to do the same thing. It's easy for us to close our eyes when we know what's actually going on. But eventually, there's just such a chorus of people. And I think Tom just eventually came to the conclusion, you know, well, we've just been sitting around. And look, Tom and I have talked about it over and over again. And generally, our default position was, well, there's just nothing to be accomplished by saying anything about it, because it's just going to get nastier and nastier and nastier. Let's just pray it blows over and goes away, and let's try to focus upon positive things, and it's not going away. And I think Tom just came to the conclusion, it's not going away. This is just going to happen over and over and over again. And I'm not even mentioning some of the other people's names that I could bring up who would chime in on this and say, yeah, we've talked to him too, and he's done this to me, and this person over there, and that person. I can name names. Name lots of names. There's a problem here. And I'm no longer the person that is going to be listened to. And Tom's no longer the person that's going to be listened to. And I think the point is, the people that still will be listened to need to say something. Because the chorus is not made up of a bunch of wild-eyed wacko liberals. The chorus is made up of people who believe many of the same things. Within the past 6 months, I made the comment that I saw a debate that J.D. Hall did. And what did I say? He won. How many times have I said, yep, he's right on the facts? It just seems, I just wish I could communicate to him that you can be right on the facts, but if you write the facts down with a pen filled with acid, it's not going to accomplish anything. It's not gonna get you anywhere. Doesn't seem to communicate. We're not the ones to tell him this anymore. You guys that are still in the circle, you've got a decision to make. Because our experience is, if you dare speak up, you will be ravaged. You will become part of the downgrade. You'll become part of the problem. I don't know what to do about it. I don't know what to do about it. I can tell you this, and I will tell you this. The most draining, discouraging thing in ministry, in a church, is infighting, backbiting. I have all the energy in the world to stand before the best debater of INC and defend the truth. No problem. And I'll take the nastiness that comes my way. And I'll go into mosques and I'll all of that stuff. But God deliver me from the politics. God deliver me from the backbiting. God deliver me from the people who call themselves Christians. And I have to accept that profession. Because there's nothing that will rip your lips off more than that kind of stuff. Here, I've got friends. And I enjoyed meeting JD the first time I met him. His passion inspired me. And I was in the company of others who I still consider my friends, but we disagree about this. We disagree about what to do about this. We disagree about how to approach this. And I'm simply going to tell you that I can vouch for the motivation and the integrity, the intentions of Pastor Tom Buck in this situation. There are few brothers better that I know than Tom Buck. And he means the world to me, so I'm biased, so you can just dismiss me. Well, no, I hope not. I hope not. My prayer is that those people who are still able to communicate without being dismissed as compromisers and leaders of the downgrade will, as a group, seek to come alongside, because J.D. Hall is a brilliant guy. But I am very, very concerned when someone can be one thing, because, you know, when he's in a debate, he has to exercise self-control. I know it's what I do. You have to be able to exercise self-control. He can. Why can't he in the pulpit bunker? That's where the difference is, because I'm the same wherever I am. But he's not. That's not good. Someone needs to do something about it for his own good and for everyone around him. For everyone around him. So this has become a public thing. And oh, there's so many people. I see the comments. I see the comments out there in the net. I just can't believe anybody's talking about this. Yeah, just shove it under the rug. That's what you all want to do. I get it. Well, you all just want to do this because you want to fight. I do not. Anybody out there, and I saw you people. I saw you in the comments. It's just a feud. If I never exchange another crossword with J.D. Hall, I will feel blessed. Folks, do you have any idea what I'm facing right now? Schedule-wise, do you have any idea? This thing is not going to collate itself against the Byzantine, Western, and Alexandrian text types. And Caesarean, too, in one spot that I have to do. It's not going to collate itself. Bagnell's entire Oxford Encyclopedia of Papyrology is not going to read itself for me. I have 3 weeks before 22 days overseas. One of the sharpest, most intelligent Roman Catholic apologists I've ever faced in an amazing context. Speaking in Wittenberg, teaching on Roman Catholicism and the Trinity in two different foreign countries via translation. And that's before the summer starts. Because not only do I go up to Colorado speaking in three different churches, in August I'm preaching in my church, then I'm back down in Johannesburg and London again. The next month, the tour to all over Europe. The month after that, two trips down to Dallas on numerous different subjects. Then it looks like off to Washington, D.C. right after that. And I have book projects, written debates. I have no earthly idea how I'm going to get any of that done. I don't have any desire for this. None. Zero. So for any of you sitting there in the comm boxes, and with your brilliant insights into people's motivations, you've missed me. I don't want any of this. But the fact is, I've been involved with it since well before last year, but I especially last year got to see what it's like to be on the receiving end of J.D. Hall's invective. And it was ugly. And I hope, my hope and prayer is that this situation will cause people, no matter how, whether you agree or disagree with how it was handled, the fact of the matter is the secrecy here has been what has allowed this to fester. The fact that people have continuously been doing the private thing is what has allowed this to go on and on and on and on. Let's get it taken care of. We've made our statements. I invite JD to ask honestly of those individuals, take their counsel, and then just ignore me. I know that our audiences overlap, but Can we just move along? I mean, I guess that's just pie in the sky, because, you know, I look at the Pulp and Pen article from April 21st on Eastern Orthodoxy, and I can't help but look at it and go, okay, there are numerous truths stated there, but the person who wrote this falls into the same trap of so many others of thinking the Eastern Orthodoxy, because they make this claim of themselves, is monolithic. You need to understand. When mystics all claim to be united, that's not the same thing as Westerners when they say they're united. And I know that most people in the West just don't understand that. They just don't get it. And I don't know how to communicate it. Sorry. It's one of the reasons I've tried to avoid that. But my point is, when I see something like that, people ask me, what do you think? And by the way, let me just add one other thing to this. I know we're going along, but I'll wrap up here as quick as I can. What?
Yeah, I got to make a point, too.
Oh.
I got a little explaining to do.
You got some explaining to do? Oh. Well, that actually derailed my train. So, go ahead.
Put the thing in so you can hear me. You had made your post on Facebook Friday morning, and I saw it. And shortly after that, I started getting phone calls from people who were concerned and reporting certain events going on in this place called Pulpit Bunker. To me, one of them sent me a screenshot of a post by Len Pettis regarding his complaint that you didn't take the bazooka to Hank Hanegraaff. And
that's what I was going to talk about.
What's that?
That's what I was going to talk about.
Yeah, okay. And I invited one of them to please post my telephone number, the number here that I answer the phones all day long, and that Len didn't bother to actually ask the question of this ministry because the answer to me was glaring. You already covered that. And I know that that post was made in the Pulpit Bunker and that the phone number was there because shortly later, I received a text on my cell phone, because he has my cell phone number, from JD saying, can I call too? I'm like, sure. The phone's open all day long. I answer the phones all day long. So call.
We don't have a camera on him, so
sorry.
You have to watch.
Well, I'll do this. Here, take a different angle of you, and you can just look at me, and everybody else will make it like, yeah, you play with a tribble or something, you know. Anyway, so I got on the phone with JD, and we talked for some time. And I will be honest here. I made sure that he called the main line and not my cell phone, because I have a headset. And I made sure that, because when I have the headset and you're on a cell phone, I have the advantage. I can raise my voice, and there's nothing you can do about it. And I did a lot of the talking in this conversation, and I voiced my view that Pulpit and Pen engages in yellow journalism on a routine basis. And I explained why I believe that to him, and that they take facts, bare facts, and then extrapolate information out of it. And he didn't disagree with that. In fact, he tried to defend it, saying in the case of Hank Hanegraaff that he was charismated, and therefore he can logically conclude or assume, was his word, that certain beliefs come with that.
He's perfectly consistent.
And I explained to him, but the fact is, you've not actually heard Hank say those things yet. He might very well say those things, but you haven't actually heard him say those things. So the programs that James did were based on two programs that Hank has done since the charismation, and he's interacting with what actually said. So the contrast between Craig, who is a known entity for 20 years, Leighton Flowers, who's been a known entity for at least 4 years, et cetera, et cetera. But he insisted he can assume certain things, that he's going to believe these things. And I said, okay, then I challenge you. Does that mean that Leighton Flowers believed the things he claimed to believe when he said he was a Calvinist? That you can extrapolate that he knew all about Reformed theology and he's right on target with it? No, you can't do that either, can you? So we had a lengthy conversation, and it came back full circle, just like you explained it there, where it's like, okay, we need to stop the back and forth. Can we just stop the back and forth, and can we talk? And I said, I will talk to James. He's on the road. We'll see if we can work something
stuff
out.
Always happens when I'm traveling.
Yeah, it always happens when traveling. So I reached out to you, and I explained that the conversation went that particular way. And I then said, after all this stuff with in South Dakota, Monday I'll get with you and explain the details. So I started going down the road of explaining the details as you're traveling back. And you said, you know what? You should talk to Tom because Tom's got this.
Yeah, because
ready to go.
And that was news to me too.
Yeah,
that I didn't know that last week when I said I was going to do.
So here's where things changed, and I'm going to explain why it changed because I called Tom up, and Tom began to explain to me what's in this article. And he began to explain to me the very conversations that he's had with JD on numerous occasions that, just like you say, well, yeah, okay, okay. And then he turns around and does it again. And yeah, well, okay. And he acknowledges these things, but then he turns around and does it again. And you know what? The things he's explaining to me are exactly the very same things I had just talked with JD on Friday about. And I realized I've just been engaging in wash, rinse, repeat.
Yeah.
But here I am in the same boat you've explained, Tom's explained, had repeated times, and I can't stand in the way of this. I could have. You know I could have. I could have said, no, we're going to stop everything, and we're going to stand, and we're going to try to, but there is no working out because it's wash, rinse, repeat. It's just the same cycle going over and over and over again, and at some point we've got to say we're going to get off the merry-go-round and do something about it. And that's why when Tom notified us that he'd posted the article on Bible Thumping Wingnut's Facebook page and that they deleted it, and he asked for our space to do that, you and I both had no problem whatsoever.
Yeah,
and we'll stand with Tom on this.
When he, I think, I'm trying to remember whether you told me about it or he told me about it first. I don't remember. I was running between planes, so I had read it. But it was on my phone, and it was fairly quick, and I was like, "Yeah, you know, this looks fine to me." I did not read it as "quote unquote" calling out anybody. I saw it as here's a problem: these people are being utilized as a shield, just as I had been at some point in the past. And look, if I were one of those people, I'd have to think twice about saying anything negative, because you see what happens. You see what could happen to you if you were to dare actually say anything, because it can get pretty ugly. So yeah, that's why it's there. And I wish this type of thing didn't happen. I really do. You know, it's bad enough that we deal with issues like, you know, I haven't had a chance really to fully delve into the Benedict Option book that I wanted to talk to people about, because, you know, you've already got in pulpit and pen the stuff being said about Dreher, and that stuff is just so extreme that the truths that are said that I would share with them end up getting splashed with the acid. That's the problem, is you end up damaging the strength of the true arguments by the attitude that you dip them in. And I think that's where a lot of people have a problem. Anyway, so there you go. So we go from the, you know, a great, great weekend. Met a lot of neat folks, a lot of cool stuff happened, and continue to pray for that. Sorry we had to deal with something that's less enjoyable, but it's necessary if we need to be consistent. And will we take heat for trying to be consistent and trying to say, hey, folks, how you present things is very, very important? You know, there's one last thing that is interesting to me. JD, quote unquote, moderated, or at least introduced, the discussion I ended up having with Justin Lee up there at the conference. And he cannot begin to say that he didn't realize. I mean, that was a... Let's just say JD could not have had that conversation with Justin. He could not have, on the fly, completely changed the entire approach to keep him in that room. Because if I had used my opening statement that I had prepared, There, that would have been all anyone heard. That and a closing door would have been it. So he's known from the start that my commitment is to be firmly committed to the truth and to do so with grace. And that's vitally, vitally important. Vitally, vitally important. So, anyways, there you go. Next time on the program, Lord willing, neat new stuff. They just published. And see, this is how it should, this is how the Green Project news should have come out. But just published two new Oxyrhynchus fragments from the New Testament. Yes, I hate to tell you this, but your Nesyalin 28th edition is now out of date. There are two new papyri. They're short. We can go through all of them. But two new Oxyrhynchus finds. One is from Ephesians, and the other from 1 Timothy, which makes it our earliest fragment of 1 Timothy. That's really cool. That's really exciting. Unfortunately, it doesn't contain 1 Timothy 3:16, which would have been big, really big. But it's still really exciting stuff. So we'll try to get a little conversation on that going on. Who knows what's going to happen between now and then, whenever then is. Thanks for listening to the program today. Hopefully it was useful to you. We'll see you next time. God bless.